everyone, and welcome back to the Sports Roundtable, your weekly discussion hub for everything Michigan State from the writers at the State News. And today is a hockey episode. We love that for us. We got hockey on the table, and we also have tennis coming up later in the show. But first, we're going to talk hockey, and who better to talk hockey with than anybody else other than Maddie Warden, our hockey expert here at the State News. You were just in Missouri to cover the hockey regionals.
I was.
Over in Maryland Heights for the regional. Tell us about that. Like, how was that experience for you, and what was that like?
It was great. I didn't sleep much, but women in sports don't sleep. So that was the only it wouldn't even be considered a downside, but it was amazing. Like, we spent a lot of time at the rink, which was freezing. Like, Munn is not that cold. This place was freezing.
And that's where the Blues practice, right?
It is. So I was really, I was very not overstimulated, but, overwhelmed when I first walked in and I saw, all of the Blues logos. And then, on the wall, they have all of the, current NHL players or past NHL players that have gone through this facility. So, Clayton Keller was up there, both Kachucks. I think Keith Kachuk was on the wall somewhere, too. But it was amazing, once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and hopefully we'll be back next year, which I'm assuming we will be. But, yeah, it was awesome.
That's crazy, and I really love that. I mean, it's sad, the result, and obviously we'll get to that. But you wanted to start with something that's kind of fun. I don't even know what this is.
I'm geeking out a little bit still about it. So we flew home yesterday morning, so we had our flight booked, and I think that it was a last second flight because we were sitting first class, which I've never flown first class before, so I felt fancy to begin with. Yeah.
Wow.
So we get to the airport where they're way earlier than we should be. So I'm just walking around, I go and get Starbucks, I go and sit down by the gate, and I'm just sitting listening to music on my phone. And I see somebody walk by out of the corner of my eye, and I'm like, he looks familiar, very distinctable face, and you'll know when I say it. But I was like, man, that is a familiar lad right there. He turns around, and there's a Red Wings logo on his backpack. Chris Draper.
Draper's just there. No way.
So we're getting ready to board the flight, and there's not there's probably one or two other flights that are going out.
Yeah. Well, because his son plays for Michigan, right?
Correct. So we're getting in line, and they call first class, and he hops in line right behind us. So we get on the plane. He's sitting. So I was in one row. Emily and I were both in the first row. I was on a window seat. She was on the other window seat on the other side. He was directly behind Emily, one seat over behind Emily. So we get off the plane, and I'm texting her the whole time when we're boarding. I'm like, I've got to meet this guy. This is Chris Draper. This is legendary. I love
That's
this guy.
Crazy.
So we get off the plane, and he's talking on the phone when he's walking up the thing to get on and off the airplane, whatever it's called, I forget.
The thing.
The thing. The ramp. The ramp. Yes. So we're getting off the airplane, and I literally stop dead in my tracks when we're in DTW itself, and I turn to Emily and I said, "We gotta stay right here. I gotta meet this guy." So I'm literally standing there, twiddling my thumbs a little bit, and I hear him hang up, and I turned around, super fast and said, "Hey, Chris, I just wanted to introduce myself. I'm a huge fan. My dad and I are both huge Red Wings fans." And so we're literally walking through the airport, going to our next gate, and he's walking with us, having a conversation about the regional game yesterday. And I was like, "Yeah, Keenan played really great. Congratulations. You guys deserve it." I literally had a whole conversation with Chris Draper. And remind you, when I never introduced myself. I never said my name because I was so starstruck. But he goes, "Nice to meet you too." And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Literally shaking. It was so cool though.
You know, it's funny too, because in situations like that, the thing that I always, I think, the thing that's helped me at least meeting people who are I value their importance, mm-hmm. is that Draper works for the Red Wings. He's part of their player scouting development, mm-hmm. things like that. And so, like, I mean, if he's a, if, you know, if he's being a dick or, you know, or something like that, then, like, he is, you know, that I feel like that would look bad, mm-hmm. you know? So I'm like, he's not going to be mean to me, right? You know, or that's how I guess I would approach it. Really nice. But that's really good. Yeah, I'm really glad that you had that experience.
It was so cool.
Wow.
But I almost, my parents were both like, dude, get a picture. And I just couldn't bring myself to, like, ask him to take a picture because I did tell him I was, like, huge Red Wings fan, like, super nice to meet you, like.
Yeah.
I've, like,
it's almost, like, team. A little bit weird, though, too, if you're working as a journalist.
To you ask him for a picture.
Right, because it's, like.
Which, I mean, I was off the job. I was literally just on a flight home, but.
Right.
Still, I was, like, I'm just going to have a conversation with him. Like, right. That's, I feel like that goes, that speaks louder than immediately going up to him and be like, hey, Chris, can I have a picture? Right. And it was also like 9 a.m. So,
yeah. And, you know, what's funny too is if you ever get out to a Michigan game, sometimes Steve Yzerman just like makes an appearance.
Stevie, I was at the NTDP game for us at the beginning of year, and he was at the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah,
too,
he comes out to a lot of college mm-hmm. games, and I'm like, bro, just he is just out here.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Stevie Y is just in the building.
Yeah.
What is happening?
Right. It's crazy. It's crazy stuff. So should we get into the regional? First of all, like the first thing I wanted to get to is the regional. Just to recap it for those who may have missed the news, didn't watch it, you know, whatever. Michigan State was the fourth ranked team in the NCAA. So they get a one seed. And they play Western Michigan. They won 5-4 in overtime.
They shouldn't have won that game, honestly.
I was thinking the same exact thing. It was actually an insane comeback.
They came back. They're known for their third period comebacks, though. So, I mean, don't count them out.
And then North Dakota played Michigan.
Which was a great game.
Was it? How was that?
It was really good. I had the opportunity to cover both Michigan State and Western and then North Dakota and Michigan. And I covered all three games and wrote for the USCHL along with State News. So I was able to watch the Michigan and North Dakota game like in depth and follow along, like sitting on press row. It was a really good game. It was a really fun one to watch. Michigan, honestly, props to them. They deserved every single bit of that win. They played great. And North Dakota came out swinging the first little bit, but Michigan just completely overpowered them. Michigan deserved to win that game.
I wasn't sure. Like, I actually had I actually had North Dakota on this game because coming into the bracket, coming into the regional, I pegged North Dakota as a pseudo one seed, like almost because they had that spot until the final week, until Michigan State. Right, exactly. So it's just kind of crazy to see the fall off, and that's kind of a bummer of an end to their season.
Yeah, it's too bad for them for sure. I was in when we first got there on Thursday. They had media availability like literally all day, so we got to our hotel and went straight to the rink basically. So I was able to sit in for the media availability that they had for both Western Michigan and North Dakota, and we ended up leaving for Michigan's, but we could find it online, so it wasn't that big of a deal. And they had both of the players that were in there with Brad Berry, who's their head coach, were Keaton Fearson and Hunter Johannes. And both of them were transfer students to North Dakota for their senior year or for their fifth year. So it was definitely a bummer to like hear them talking and hear how excited they were. And Keaton Fearson played all 4 years at Michigan before that. So obviously like there's a lot of adrenaline and energy going into playing your former team that you were with for all 4 years of college. And I wouldn't say that they talked about like having their expectations high, but they were definitely excited to play. Like they knew it was going to be a good game, and then just seeing how it ended, just in heartbreak for them as well as for us. But yeah, it was a really good game.
I was really thinking that Michigan State would have won the final game. I know that it's hard. See, and I don't like to like, I feel like I don't want to seem like I'm making excuses for Michigan State, but I've been shouting for years that the NCAA tournament should be, at least some of the games should be a best of three format instead of a single elimination, because it almost like takes away from the integrity of the sport. Like imagine if we got a three game series. again, you know, between Michigan and Michigan State. Like, that would be, in my opinion, better for the sport than the single elimination. Like, it works really well for a March Madness or, you know, something like that with women's and men's basketball, even women's soccer. I really enjoy that. But for hockey, it just feels like, maybe this is the purist in me, like, coming out, but, like, I feel like, you know, that would hockey would really benefit in a lot of ways from a best of three.
Yeah, I mean, and their sport to begin with is played in series. Like,
right. Whether well, it be, right, there's two games every weekend.
Yeah, I mean, and if you look at it, like, there's two games every weekend. Sometimes there's you just play the lone game, which they're usually exhibition games. NHL is played in series, like, along throughout the season, which the Red Wings swept Tampa this season, so...
Which is crazy saying, to me.
Which is amazing. Speaking of series sweeps. But yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that having a best of three series would just, it would benefit the sport. It would be more entertaining for people to watch. Like, yeah.
I think, like I said, I do think that, like, Michigan, I don't know for sure that Michigan would have, that they would have won. Right, in a best of three. I don't know that Michigan State would have won. And not a lot of teams do. But, like, in a sport where it's inherently, like, you got to win both, right? You got to play two. Where a sport is inherently like that, that's it just, I guess, was a little bit disappointing. Not only just because the team that I wanted to win lost, but also, like, it's like this is the end of the season, and this was such an anticlimactic way for it to end.
Now you just gotta wait for October, I guess.
Yes, it's well, ugh. Yeah, and like, and maybe, there's a new, you know, college football video game that's coming out, and maybe that might, you know, with because there's no other sport to watch from here now till
baseball.
Yeah,
we still have playoff hockey too.
Yeah,
we still have playoff hockey.
I mean,
we still
yeah,
have
but
the
like
Red Wings.
Michigan State's not. You know, I'm like Michigan thinking State's from fine. Like a college perspective. You know, it's just hard.
I have to jump around,
but
I can't go a long period of time without sports. Literally can't do it. And summer is the worst because then you get baseball and you get golf.
Yeah.
And when there's no baseball on, then I'm forced
you
to watch golf with my dad.
You should just watch Formula One. That's what you should do.
I know.
Where,
I need
you
to.
Know, you, that would be. I got some great stuff for you to watch. So going back to that game, Michigan State, Michigan. Just to break it down real quick, I guess like what, what are your pointers? Just off the top, what do you think that Michigan did well, and what do you think that Michigan State could have done better? Like how you know was the narrative to the game going along?
I think for the most part, they were pretty even until the last 10 minutes of the game, and that's where things really started to fall apart for Michigan State. But they came out really, really hot. Like, they played – their defense looked incredible until the last 10 minutes of the game. Obviously, we have beat them four times in a row. Mm-hmm. And we won the regular season title. We won the Big Ten tournament. And Michigan was hungry. Like – as much as we wanted to get to the Frozen Four, I think that Michigan wanted it a little bit more. Just to brag about back-to-back-to-back Frozen Fours, we beat you, ruined your season, because it's Michigan. Like, we would probably do the same thing to them if we were in that situation of being like, haha, your season's done.
Yeah.
That's just the rival. But Michigan State was hot for the first probably 30 minutes, and then that's when things started kind of going downhill. So we scored first. And then Ethan Edwards scored, Marshall Warren scored, we evened it with Joey Larson, and then it went Michigan, Michigan, Michigan. And props to them, like they played a really great game, like they wanted it more than us in the third period, like that's all it came down to. And honestly, I think that after Frankie Nazar put the puck between his legs and passed it to Gavin Brindley, and just, that was the end. Like that was the realization that we probably weren't going to win that game was when we saw that move from Frank.
I think, like, for me, it's tough. I think, I mean, part of me, you know, didn't want to watch that game because I didn't know how it would end. Mm-hmm. I think that was the tough thing for me. But on top of that, the other issue... was Trey Augustine. I think, was it wasn't not necessarily the issue, but like I had so much faith in him, you know, that like I was like, we got Trey. Like it's not a big deal. And I think that is really interesting because it kind of goes into the whole like how important and how valuable he is to the team. And I don't think that people think about that enough. Like, I know that a lot of people wanted Kyle MacLellan to be the Big Ten goalie of the year. No. I vehemently and adamantly say that it would be Trey Augustine because I do not think that Michigan State wins the Big Ten. I don't think that they – I definitely don't think that they win their regional against Western Michigan, if not for Trey Augustine. I mean, that post-to-post save that he had completely, like, changed Michigan State's momentum for that entire game. And just – I guess that's my perspective is that, like, Trey Augustine – like, while Michigan State does have they score in depth, like, none of their players are in, like, the top, like, 40 in points or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, Nightingale
like,
says that they're probably not even in the top 60.
Probably not.
The only person that's close is either Isaac Howard or Artie.
Right, and Lev Shinov's a defenseman, which is crazy.
But
so
he's got,
like
34 assists on the year.
And that's the thing. And so, like, I guess what I'm getting at is that, like, Michigan State doesn't have, you know, they don't have like high their ceiling isn't as high as not necessarily ceiling. Sorry, I'm not being as articulate. Mm-hmm. But I guess like I just like they don't have as much high power as like Michigan does.
So here's my counter argument for you though. Seamus Casey got hurt for Michigan the night before, was out for the I think two periods against Nodak. Didn't play against Michigan State.
Right.
And you see, like, it's blatantly obvious how their power play without Seamus Casey just completely crumbles underneath them. They scored one power play goal, and they had, like, seven different opportunities to go on the power play again. Like, they scored one power play goal, and it wasn't until the last 2 minutes.
I actually thought that Michigan State was going to win because Seamus Casey was out.
But if you think about it, like, I love the depth that we have. Like, every single line is a scoring line. I don't think that we need to have somebody who is a powerhouse like McGrody or Gavin Brindley. Because if we have that one person that we rely on, if they're out, we fall apart.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened to them. Without Seamus, they just crumbled on their power play.
Yeah, and something...
And they're number one in the country.
Something I think about, too, is that either... I want to say it's like, because I mean, the interesting thing about like hockey, right, is that a lot of players don't develop until they're, you know, 20, 21, 22, or develop like big, you know, to be, you know, a huge star. And so the interesting thing to me about that is that you often see like a lot of guys that go undrafted and have actually like, they might not have superstar NHL careers, but they have solid NHL careers.
Like Carson Dorwart.
And Carson Dorwart is one of them, who went undrafted. Larson, yeah, sure. He's having a great season. I do really think about Dorwart though, because he is like consistently I do think that it helps, you know, playing a lot with Russell. But you know,
him and
they
Russell,
played
yeah,
they
great.
Played together in the USHL and just had that dynamic ever since they came to MSU. But but
I think that Joshua could have been drafted, honestly. But he didn't like hit his peak until senior year because we got Nightingale in.
Right.
That's how he developed a lot.
And he was
well,
and that's the thing too with Joshua, it was interesting because he was used as a completely different player. Under Nightingale, he was used in a completely different way.
He was a center.
I guess what I'm sort of getting at is that like the philosophy from Danton Cole to Nightingale was much different, and there was a much more like physical style of play. And I think that with Nightingale, he fit better into his system and was a much better player. Like, he was out in front of the net, he was screening. Nightingale really got the best out of him.
That's exactly how Dakota plays too at Vancouver. Like him and his brother have the exact same style of play. They just had to figure out how to use Jagr in that essence of things.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing I think I love about Nightingale is he's able to find a player's strength, and he's really able to kind of push them to see what their potential is instead of just kind of like, I mean, I don't mean to seem mean, but like I felt like Danton Cole was just kind of like throwing players out and just like throwing darts at a dartboard and like blindly. But we're not going to talk enough about that. It's old news, old news. So MSU ends up losing, right? So as far as the season itself, right, we kind of had the expectations based on how aggressive MSU was in the portal, which was, you know, I think it was when they got the transfer from Isaac Howard that I was really, really on board with this team's transfers. You know, they obviously had a ton of momentum. Part of it was getting Augustine the commitment the previous fall from, they flipped him from Michigan. And then Michigan was going through their own thing at the time. But then they also got a bunch of commitments in a row. One of them was Howard, you know, through the portal. They got Levshinov, which was crazy insane. I've said this before, and I'll say it again, that the only reason he's in the NCAA is because the OHL doesn't allow Belarusian players to play in the league. And it almost feels like alien, the fact that Levshinov's even here. Or was here. I mean, he's going to the NHL. I can almost guarantee it.
No.
You don't think so?
Absolutely not.
Really?
Absolutely not. I think he stays for one more year.
You really do?
For sure he stays one more year.
Really? Why do you think that?
Because I think that next season is our season.
Oh, okay.
And I think Nightingale and the coaching staff as well would want him to develop more than he has. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that he comes back to Michigan State next year.
Interesting. I think because the way that I always thought about it was that, like, it depends on which team drafts him. Like, I was thinking that if San Jose drafts second, but they're drafting number one, I mean, it depends on who wins the lottery. Yeah.
Which is stupid.
Well, of course, yeah. Like, sometimes I forget that the NHL lottery is a thing because Detroit's just never won it. So, like, I kind of forget. Yeah, exactly. But if San Jose wins the lottery, which they should, but you never know. If San Jose drafts second, I think that, like, Levshinov, you could fit him on San Jose's roster, like, right now. And so I thought that would be more appealing than going back to college for another season.
I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm just...
Because if San Jose drafts number one, they're probably taking Celebrini. Right, because that's his upside is way higher than any defenseman's probably would be. But they still need a lot of defense. And so, they're huge. That's one of their biggest needs right now.
I just can't imagine him going to the NHL, like, even if San Jose were to draft him. Like, yeah, they need defense.
Right.
But we want a national title so bad. We want it, and clearly we wanted it.
It is up to him, though. Like, I mean, you know, it's up to San Jose to convince him to sign. Yeah.
And right? I don't know, man. I don't know. I would hope that he would come back another year. I think he's going to be like an Owen Power. Play his first year, go high in the draft, play his second year.
Yeah.
Peace out.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it any other way. Or even Luke Hughes. Play 2 years. Go after that.
It is. Yeah, I think the tough thing is that, like, I just see him and I'm like, you could play, like, right now. I don't even know. I actually don't know that he would. Because, like, I guess it would be up to him. Like, I'm not an NHL player. I don't know what that, like, everybody has different preferences on how. For the longest time, I didn't think that who was the guy that played for Minnesota and then got drafted by Arizona?
Cooley.
Was it Cooley? Right. And now he plays for the Coyotes, right? And so I, for the longest time, I didn't think that he was ever going to go to Arizona because Arizona's like, they play in a college rink. How is that much different than, you know, and soon enough with NIL, like, this might, I don't know how, to what effect, because we haven't seen it yet to its largest degree, but it will affect hockey. And I don't know to what extent it will. So I'm wondering how that will influence the you know, the contracts and how and how everyone, you know, I mean, because if you're Artem Levchinov, I mean, if San Jose's offering you like an NHL entry level contract, but you have the choice to go back to coaches you really like at MSU and develop there, continue first year development, then there's a bunch of NLI or NIL money left for you to also pounce on. Like that is not that much of an unattractive deal, right? So so that I guess that's a good point, but we haven't really seen that yet. So here's the trivia question. Trey Augustine has been leading Michigan State this season with incredible performances in net. Notably, he made a crazy post-to-post save against Western Michigan and was able to keep MSU in the game. He's done that a lot this season. What goalie set a record for both save percentage and goals against average for a single season in 2004? Was it A, Rick DiPietro, B, Jimmy Howard, C, Ryan Miller, or D, Rob Stauber?
Ryan Miller, former Michigan State Spartan.
Is that your guess?
That's my guess.
I am so sorry. I am so sorry. Let's find the answer.
Was it Jimmy?
It was, yes.
Was it Jimmy?
It was. Let me find
former Red Wing.
The exact answer, yeah. So, here it is. Right here. Okay.
Did I have his name spelling correct?
I don't know. I haven't pulled it up. I have to pull it up. You can research that.
I'm going to.
So, Jimmy Howard did it while playing for the Maine Black Bears, as he had a save percentage of 956. Isn't that a lot?
Yeah.
So he had a save percentage of 956 and a goals against average of 1.19. He was drafted 64th overall, as we know, by the Detroit Red Wings in 2003. Rick DiPietro made 77 saves in one game. That's why he's on this list. So he had that record for a while. I don't know if it's been broken. Ryan Miller has a career shutout record with 26. At the time, he did have the save percentage record. I know that for sure. I think he might have also had the GAA record, but I can't be certain. Rob Stauber had a career saves mark at 1,711.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, did I spell his name wrong?
Yeah, you did.
Damn. Okay.
You're welcome. It's J-I-M-M-Y.
Nobody needs
There's
to
no
see
I-E.
This.
There's no I-E. When has Jimmy ever been spelled with an
Jimmy
I-E?
Jimmy Johnson does that. I don't know why.
Jimmy Howard doesn't.
Yeah, I know. I'm
fake
so
Red Wings fan.
I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. I don't watch NASCAR, but you know how it goes. You know how it goes. Anyway, this has been the Sports Roundtable. Did you get the trivia question right? Let us know in the comments if you're watching on YouTube. If you're on podcast, then watch on YouTube, I guess. Yeah, figure it out. Hopefully you guys got it right. But anyway, coming up next, we got a nice interview with Harry Jaden, who is the MSU men's tennis coach. And he is a lovely man, spent a very considerable amount of time with us to talk about men's tennis, the state of the program, the generous donation by Joan Sakia, and a ton more. So stay tuned for that, and I'll see you guys in the next one.
16-3, right, is the record. Number 18 in the ITA rankings, and Ozan Barış had a lot of hype. In the last, he's just a sophomore, so he just came in last year. He's from Okemos. And this team just, a lot of people are putting it as the most successful in program history, the most talented. Tell me about this program and I guess contextualize it a little bit for me. Like, what does it mean for the program to have the success it's having now?
Yeah, no, it's been a really, really fun year. And we kind of knew it was coming to a certain extent just with the recruiting we've been doing and the roster we put together. We felt pretty strongly that we were going to have success. And we really came out of the gate just firing. I think we won our first 12 or 13 matches or something like that. It might have been a surprise to a lot of people across the country, but to us, honestly, it feels like we're right where we need to be, or, you know, if not underachieving a little bit. The guys are really hungry. We've had a few matches of those three that we've lost that we felt like we kind of let one slip. But, you know, the guys are playing really, really tough, and it's just an exciting time. I mean, I'd say college tennis is very similar to college basketball in the format of it. You know, you have your non-conference season, then you go into conference play, and you play everybody about 25 matches throughout the year. And the top 64 teams make the NCAA tournament, similar to March Madness. You have the automatic qualifiers, and you have the at-large bids, all that. So right now we're in really good position to make the NCAA tournament for the second time in program history. And yeah, obviously looking to do some damage in the Big Ten tournament and the NCAA tournament as well. So get excited.
That's really cool. And just for people that, like, I guess, don't know too much about tennis, like, how does a typical – like tennis match go? So you got, I would imagine, a set number of players, and then you everyone like plays each other, or they match up a certain way. Like, how does that work?
Yeah, so it starts off with doubles, and you roll out three doubles teams out there. So there's three courts going at once, and doubles is very short. It takes about 30 minutes. It's only one set, so that's just six games. And in terms of doubles, the format is whoever wins two out of three of those doubles points, for lack of a better term, gets a mega point towards the team match. Very childish way to say it, but that's essentially what it is. So you come out of the doubles point, whoever wins two out of three of those, they're up 1-0 in the dual match is what it's called, or 0-1 they're down, and then you roll out six singles players, and players can play doubles and singles, or just doubles, or just singles, depending. In each one of those singles match, that's a full two out of three match, more traditional tennis match, two out of three sets. And whoever wins each of those matches gets 1 point. So you have the doubles point, and then you have the six singles matches that each count as an individual mega point. So then it's the first team to four.
And tell me a little bit about Barish. I mean, like I said, everybody had some sort of hype when he came in, you know, was a freshman. I think was at one point ranked number four nationally, now number five. He's from Okemos, local kid. I heard that he used to, like, come and watch you play when you were at MSU.
Yeah. No, he's a local kid. He's an unbelievable kid. I've known him since he was probably 8, 9 years old, just because, yeah, he grew up in the area and he was a competitive tennis player. So on the weekends when he didn't have a tournament, he'd come out and he'd watch the MSU tennis team. And, yeah, I mean, he's by far and away the highest ranked recruit we've ever gotten. He was, you know, probably top three in his recruiting class in the nation. He was a top 15 junior in the world. So that kind of puts it in perspective. You know, if you bring in one of the best 15 players in the world, you're in really good shape, because a lot of those guys that are in the top 15 of the ITF junior rankings, which is the world rankings, they just go straight pro. So in terms of collegiately, he might have been just the second best player in all of college to come to college that year. And, you know, part of the sell there was he could have gone to, you know, your traditional powerhouses, Stanford, Virginia, Texas, USC, UCLA, but he wanted to really create his own legacy and, you know, build something special here in East Lansing. And to his credit, he committed to that vision. We sold him on that vision. He committed to it, and he's really willed it into existence. So anytime anybody asks about, you know, the start that I've gotten in my coaching career, a lot of that credit does go to, you know, Ozan and other players who have really taken a chance on me as a first-time head coach in my first and second years. And, you know, things are really, really working out well for him.
With where MSU's at now with, you know, with the tennis programs, you just had that huge donation from Joan Sakia. What would you say was or is the biggest challenge as far as building this program?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest challenge is, you know, we're getting into a stratosphere where we're hoping to finish this year at least in the top 10. Based on how we finish down the stretch in Big Ten play and NCAA tournament. But it gets really, the air just gets really thin. I mean, before we could win a recruiting battle against, you know, a top 50 team, and that would be viewed as a success. But now when you want to compete in the top 10, you got to win recruiting battles against the blue bloods, you know, the traditional powerhouses, as I said. And that's tough because they have a lot of the resources and facilities and things like that we're trying to build. Obviously, you know, Joan's donation goes a huge way in addressing that gap, but it's just not easy because you're competing against the best of the best, and I think that's the biggest challenge. I mean, the climb is a lot of fun, and we're getting close to the mountaintop. We still got a little ways to go, but once you get to the mountaintop, you know, being a top 10, top 5 team, and really hopefully winning Big Ten championships, national championships, and stuff like that, it's really maintaining it, and the sell becomes different. You know, I told you we sold Ozan on creating a legacy. Well, then our cell has to kind of switch to, hey, we've already had the first wave of guys come through. You guys got to be the second wave that really maintains it and keeps it going.
And wow, that's really cool. It's really cool to see, you know, the tennis program do such, like, you know, I don't know, just huge things. And what for you? What is it like to come back to MSU and coach?
Yeah. No, it's I don't really view it as work. This is just, I mean, MSU, because I was raised in East Lansing, is part of who I am. I mean, I grew up going to football games, basketball games, you know, filling out brackets with MSU winning the championship every year during March, things like that. And that's a privilege. There's a lot of coaches out there who are coaching, you know, they're not at their alma mater. They kind of have to take the first few years to kind of get the lay of the land, who's important at the university, you know, alums, stuff like that. When I, you know, started up as a head coach, I kind of had that all baked in because I knew a lot of the alums because I watched them play growing up, or, you know, we were in contact when I was playing for the team. And, you know, I'm familiar with the surroundings, living at home, all that good stuff is definitely a huge advantage.
And I want to jump forward real quick to the NCAA tournament because I know, you know, it does, you know, cap off the season, right? And you guys are kind of looking, you know, like that is going to be a promising stretch for you. I want to know how does that work, and how is that different from the regular season? And you know how, like, basketball single elimination.
Right.
Do you get in sort of a more like there's more not at stake, but just more jeopardy in, like, you know, you have a bad game or, you know, things like that, and you're out, or how does that?
No, for sure. I mean, the format of the matches in the NCAA tournament, it's a 64-team tournament. The matches are the same format I kind of described earlier. You're trying to get to 4 points. And, you know, the pressure is just, if you don't, you know, we've got 5 seniors on our team. And if you don't win, they go home. They don't get another college tennis match. They're done. And that's a little bit of a different type of pressure. And I think people take that for granted in the NCAA basketball tournament of, like, you look at these players and you see them as players, and really they're humans, and every time they go out there, the guys that are going to the NBA, sure, you know, they have a big future in basketball and they're going to make millions of dollars, but a lot of those other guys, you know, they're heading overseas where there's not going to be as many people at the games, or there's not going to be, you know, people on Twitter aren't going to be talking about them, but during the March Madness tournament they are. So for them, it's really the, you know, last game they'll play that's relevant, and for college tennis the same way. You know, until you make it to the Grand Slams, which is very, very tough to do, you know, college tennis is pretty popular. There's a very large following. We have a lot of fans, big community around us, and they're important matches. So that's really just kind of getting the guys to really focus and play every point like it's the last one is going to be the challenge. But I'd be sitting here lying to say, you know, I know what to do in that situation because I haven't coached in the NCAA tournament, even as an assistant coach. And, yeah, I mean, we got to kind of figure it out. We're all in the same boat as a team, so.
Now, how where do you think this team is headed, or I guess what are the, like, realistic expectations that you got?
Yeah, I mean, we want to win a Big Ten championship, and we go on the road. We play a tough Illinois team that's ranked, like, one spot behind us in the rankings. That's a really good test to see where we're at. And then also just on the road against Ohio State, on the road against Michigan, who's always going to be tough, and they're going to play their heart out. You know, we got to go on the road and do it this year. Next year, our schedule looks a lot better. A lot of those matches are at home, so it's a lot easier of a path. But this year, it's going to be, we have to grit our teeth, strap up our boots, and go out and get some road wins. So, really excited. I mean, I can't wait till Saturday when we play in Illinois. It's going to be an awesome environment. They have a, you know, historic program. They're actually the last team in the Big Ten to win the national championship. So, it'd be cool to get a win against those guys.
Wow, that's awesome. And and that's great. And MSU, just to be clear, has MSU ever won a Big Ten championship before in tennis?
Yeah, but not in my lifetime. It was,
okay.
It was, I want to say 1967 was the last one.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's dang near almost 60 years ago now. So
that's crazy.
A lot of people weren't alive, you know, that are alive now then. It's going to be a really cool opportunity and really special for us to do that if we can do it, to hang another banner. Mean a lot.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Harry, for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Brad.
Of course.